Now, the voices of Bronco Athletics, Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.
Let's say Boise State basketball wins most of the rest of their games, maybe drops one, two tops. Boise State is going to be on the proverbial bubble as far as an at-large team. So we're going to be hearing a lot about RPI, BPI, indexes, also the eyeball test as to whether Boise State basketball would deserve to get into the NCAA tournament. And coming up today at 1:15 from The Athletic, we will be hearing from Sam Vecini, who is going to kind of take us through these different metrics that are used to try to determine which are the best teams in the NCAA. Chris, whatever happened to, I like that team, they look good, they're in.
You can't back that up. You can't explain that. That's not really objective, and it's just really hard to be in a room and have a debate, whether it's a debate show or you're on a committee, and just point to, well, I like them, right? Because that inherits some kind of bias to it, right? And what you're trying to do is to take out the bias when it comes to your college basketball observation and trying to boil it down into easy-to-consume numbers. Now, the problem with this is I think we've gotten to the point where there are so many different rankings and rating systems that which ones you value now turn into the bias versus, you know, you used to say, well, I like this team or I like that team, and that's your bias. Now, I like this ranking system and I like that ranking system. I think that has now become the bias. So how do you kind of, like, this is a political saying, but, like, you know, cut through the noise and actually find out the truth of which teams are which, how to evaluate them, and what happens when one team is a lot higher than in one metric than they are in another? Which one are you supposed to listen to? And I'm struggling right now to really, like, I used to be able to at least have an idea of, okay, RPI, they're here, they've won their conference, or it looks like they finished top three, and okay, you might have an idea of what people might think of them. Now I really have no idea what people want to look at.
Chris, and maybe this comes from 32 years of calling games for mid-majors, if you will, certainly not Power Fives, at Bucknell in the Patriot League, UMass in the Atlantic 10, and now Boise State first in the WAC, and now in the Mountain West. I have something that is very biased to the mid-majors that I'd like to see put into play. I don't think it'll ever get put in because the Power Five would hate my rule. The mirror, mirror on the wall rule.
What?
You look into the mirror. You look into the mirror, and the question is asked, did you have a good season?
Oh.
If you are under 500 in your conference, there is no way you can answer that question as yes. So mirror, mirror on the wall eliminates every team that's under 500 in their conference. If you don't go 500 in your league, I don't care what league it is, see ya.
Yeah, but there are some ranking systems that will value somebody going 8-10 in the ACC better than going 16-2 in some of these conferences. So, like, as much as what you wish your rule was the case, at some points it's the opposite, right? Like, there are some ways where you could spin it, and I've seen it done before, where, you know, you could literally only have one loss in your league, but if someone's arguing for, I'll go on my school. I'll bang on them because it's been done before. Syracuse has made the tournament with an under 500 record in the ACC before. It's happened, and they ended up, I think, going to the Final Four that year. So are they right? And do we measure how they do in the NCAA tournament as proof that a ranking system is right? Like, how do we check on this? Like, what are the receipts? Like, if a team that is outside the top 35 in RPI goes on a run in the NCAA tournament and that team was higher in BPI, is that a mark against the RPI? Or vice versa, if an RPI top 5 team and that same squad is a BPI outside the top 30 and they go on a run to make the Final Four, does that strike against the BPI? And do we ever even go back and check this? Do we even go back and do the receipts on this?
Looking at some of the numbers, Boise State is 35 in the RPI, 50 in the BPI. Now, to me, a swing of 15 is a fairly substantial difference. And then there's the Ken Pom, of which Boise State is 48. So 48 and 50 to me would be pretty close. So maybe the BPI and the KenPom are more similar to one another than the RPI. When you look at Nevada, they are 14 in the RPI. They are 24 in the BPI, but they are 16 in the KenPom. So they are closer in two polls that are different than the two that Boise State is close in. San Diego State is the third best team in KenPom, but Wyoming is third best in the RPI and the BPI.
Do you know your ABCs?
No.
At a certain point, like, I don't. And you know what I've noticed? And the more I dug into this, and within the last 24 hours, like since we knew we were going to kind of attack it in this way, I have kind of been like going through it, researching. And one of the trends that I've noticed with the NCAA tournament is it seems like the number of at-large spots going to mid-major teams has been getting smaller over the past few years. That's a trend that you've noticed as well.
Correct. I would agree with that.
Okay. I take that. And then I also notice that over the last few years, we have been using more of these ranking systems to determine who gets into the NCAA tournament. You've been watching college basketball much longer than me, but I've noticed enough to know that the graphics that have a team's tournament resume, they used to just have record spot in the conference in RPI, right? Like, that's what it used to have. And now it does have BPI, KenPom, strength of schedule ratings. It has more things on it. So, okay, let's put two and two together. They're starting to put more things on these graphics. And at the same time, less and less of these spots are going to the mid-majors who get into the NCAA tournament as at-larges. Then I look at some of the mid-majors who are appearing in the fringe part of the rankings. Now, Rhode Island, I'm looking at them. They're number 9 in the RPI. That is fantastic. Rhode Island, number 9 in the RPI. But then I take a look at the rankings, the AP and coaches poll. They're 24 and 23. That is significantly lower than the 9 that they are in the RPI. And then I take a look at BPI, and Rhode Island is all the way down to 29. So that is significantly lower than the 9 that they are in with the RPI. And I know this is number heavy for a lot of you, but just trying to kind of simplify it into RPI sees them a lot higher than the rankings and the BPI. Nevada, the team that you just mentioned, they're top 15 when it comes to RPI. So really good at RPI. But when it comes to rankings, they're only ranked in one poll, and they're number 24, significantly lower in BPI. So the conclusion that I'm gathering is, as we bring in more of these BPI, strength of schedule, strength of wins metrics, it's taking away the value of RPI. And by taking away the value of RPI, where some of these mid-major schools do shine, you're taking away their spots when it comes to an at-large spot in the NCAA tournament.
The other thing I've never liked about these computer rankings is that there has to be a bias built into the way they do the formula, because very quickly, week one, there is a big discrepancy between teams in the Power Five and the non-Power Five in football, if there isn't something built in to help the Power Fives out, in my opinion. Because if you're not going to take score into account, which some of these don't, how does somebody that wins a game go higher than somebody that wins a game also on the same week if there's only one sample size week to take a look at?
Yeah, I mean, can you explain that a little bit farther? I was trying to follow that there. I kind of got a little complicated.
Okay, if we start a season, and let's say the computer metrics in some of them don't take into account score, okay? If I win my week one game and you win your week one game and Fish's team wins his week one game, we theoretically all should be the same. But that's not the case.
No, I mean,
with one game, a one game sample size.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's the whole thing is, at least in basketball, you're starting to get like at least a bigger part of the sample size.
You got about 20 games right now, give
or
take.
You get 20 games, but like the level that the opponents are playing at, what they would look like when you were facing them at a certain time and where they look like now that you're facing them a little bit later in the season, you know, that all kind of throws wrenches and makes it so that maybe complete number rankings just can't be done to really rank the teams. And I think that's why they have a committee and they do try to put eye test to the thing. But again, how are you supposed to eye test 68 teams? Okay. And that's just who makes it. Like, that's really – that leaves way too much room for bias when you're trying to eye test 68 teams. When you know you've seen Duke more than you've seen Rhode Island. Like, that's not even a competition. Like, Rhode Island might have a CBS Sports Network game once in a while. It might play on a Friday on ESPN, whatever deal that they got. But they're not on Monday and Wednesdays and Saturdays like Duke is. So your eye test is going to be flawed because of that.
Boise State has beaten 16 different teams this year. Their highest RPI win is Loyola of Chicago. They looked terrible when they were here. Boise State may have played their best game of the season. So if you caught that game, 87-53 for Boise State, you would never think Loyola of Chicago was a good team watching that game. Boise State made them look silly.
Interesting, yeah. And I wonder.
And if you caught the SMU game for Boise State, you'd probably think Boise State was terrible.
And now there's also the head-to-head aspect of it, too, which, like, you take a look at, I know it was a week ago, the last four in the first four out, Boise State was in the in position, SMU was in the out position. Mm-hmm. Now, if that was reversed, Boise State fans would be having a fit, right? If Boise State crushed SMU in the way that SMU crushed Boise State, and within the last four in, first four out, SMU was in the in part, and Boise State was in the out part, this would be flip out of the century. This would almost reach the level of having to play Dayton at Dayton in the NCAA tournament and calling it a neutral site game. So even when you throw in the head-to-head aspect, and football is where that comes up a lot more than in basketball, but in the rare times that it matters in basketball, where does head-to-head rank in the KenPom RPI BPI?
Super Bowl will be on Sports Radio The Ticket. The Super Bowl pregame show will start at noon a week from Sunday, and the game will kick off at 4:30. It'll be Kevin Harlan and Boomer Esiason on the call of the Eagles and the Patriots. So if you can't watch it, listen to Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM The Ticket. Up next, college basketball expert Sam Vecenie from The Athletic is going to help us explain some of those metrics that are used to separate the teams. Stay tuned. We're going to learn a lot. That's next on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio The Ticket. Talking college basketball and how a lot of these BPIs, RPIs, et cetera, work. And the best guy we could think of is Sam Vecenie, who covers college basketball for The Athletic, a great collection of sports writers. He also hosts the podcast, the Game Theory Podcast. Sam, we appreciate your time today.
How's it going, guys?
We're doing great. So we want you to help us make heads or tails out of some of these indexes, kind of like what they might value more than some of the other ones do. So why don't we start with RPI? What makes that different and unique?
So in terms of the RPI, what you're looking at is, you know, they try and project based off of strength of schedule and based off of who you beat and who you don't beat. Now, what the RPI is going to do is it's going to underrate road and neutral wins in a way, because it doesn't really have heavy enough weight on road neutral wins. And we know how difficult it is in college basketball to win out on the road. You know, other metrics such as KenPom, for instance, will have a pretty substantial weight on road and neutral wins. And puts that into their projections. RPI is also more of a results-based formula, whereas KenPom is a bit more of a projection-based formula. So, you know, I would say that the RPI is, you know, probably the most important number in terms of NCAA tournament still, but it's also probably the least reflective number in terms of actual team quality, just because I don't really think that it's complex enough to deal with everything that you're seeing on the basketball floor, but it is still something that has been used over the course of the last three decades, however long it's been around, and given who is in that room deciding NCAA tournament team's fate, I would imagine that just by nature of human nature, you're probably going to fall back on what you know.
Sam Vecenie of The Athletic, also the host of the fantastic basketball podcast, the Game Theory podcast. Now, ESPN has their BPI index. What are the strengths and weaknesses of that, and what teams tend to come up higher in the BPI rankings?
So the BPI stands for Basketball Power Index. It's essentially supposed to measure how good a team is. And again, it is more of a predictive number as opposed to a what you've actually accomplished number, which means that, you know, it goes off of their strength of record, you know, accomplishment that does have road and neutral wins kind of baked in. It has travel distance. It has, you know, pace, your efficiency numbers, your tempo neutral numbers. Ultimately, at the end of the day, the goal here for the BPI is more to predict what is going to happen in the future, which is valuable. And I think that in a lot of ways, if I was kind of on the NCAA tournament committee, that's probably something I would rather know than anything the RPI is giving you. But I'm a little bit lower on the BPI than anything else.
Sam Vecenie joining us from The Athletic, talking ratings in college basketball as far as the indexes go. Each one of the formulas, no matter which one of these, there has to be some bias in it to what they like, what they don't like. Are there certain conferences, certain teams in these formulas and indexes that have an inherent advantage to the way things go?
Well, I think that you see often with any strength of schedule-based metric, which, you know, all of these metrics in some regard take strength of schedule into account, you know, what you're going to find is that teams that, you know, don't necessarily test themselves in the non-conference and yet play in a non-Power 5, Power 6 conference are going to be behind the eight ball in terms of their strength of record or, you know, their strength of schedule based components. Now, Boise State went out. They played a good team in Loyola Chicago. They played Oregon. They played Iowa State. They played Grand Canyon and SMU as well. You know, they actually went out and tested themselves relatively well in their non-league schedule. You look at their non-conference schedule, it is slightly below average, but whenever you're Boise State, you're just really trying to avoid that disaster number, I think, while still racking up a quality number of wins, which is something they did. The problem is going to be that in terms of the Mountain West, you've got San Jose State, Air Force, I would even throw Utah State and Colorado State into this and say that, you know, those teams are really going to drag down the metrics in terms of strength of schedule for Boise State going forward.
Now, one of the things that I've noticed, and you can correct me if you think my observation is off, but it seems like BPI and KenPom are being used a lot more, and especially when watching a television broadcast, those numbers are being shown much more than they were 5 or 6 years ago. During that same time span, it seems like the percentage of at-large spots in the NCAA tournament for mid-major teams has dropped from where it was 4, 5, 6 years ago. Is there any connection to the more of these different types of rankings index that are used, the more that it's hurting the mid-majors?
I don't think so, because I still don't think that the selection committee has integrated these metrics enough or as much as they should have. You know, last year, I think that it was an oddly down year in terms of mid-major quality. This year, I think that you can make a case that Gonzaga, St. Mary's, Boise State, Nevada, New Mexico State even is a really, really strong team this year. You know, Rhode Island is another really good team. St. Bonaventure has done a decent amount in terms of their accomplishments if they can start turning their season around, even though they've lost 4 of 5 recently within the Atlantic 10. I think the stronger crop of mid-majors this year, which I think is going to help going forward with their odds with the selection committee, but I don't think that it's necessarily anything where the metrics are holding down another team, just or like any mid-major team, just because, if anything, I think these metrics you know, probably help because they account for, you know, efficiency-based metrics and margin of victory a lot more than, for instance, the RPI does.
Sam Vecenie joining us. He is from The Athletic. He is our college basketball writer. Sam, as we look to Boise State and look down the road of what's coming in the Mountain West tournament, from what you've seen, looked at, read, gut feel, how many more losses can Boise State sustain and still have a shot at it at large? And how much does it matter who, and maybe more importantly, where the games are played?
Well, so you're looking at a team in Boise State right now that, according to KenPom, which is what I use, I mean, I'm sure that there are other metrics that other people use, and I'm sure that many will use the RPI, I'm sure that many will use the BPI. You know, according to KenPom, at least, though, which I think is the best set of numbers on the, you know, internet or that is publicly available right now, they still are without a top 50 win, which is going to make it obviously exceedingly difficult going forward. I think that that means they probably, you know, have to beat Nevada at home on February 14th to really get a lot of consideration for an at-large berth. Even beyond that, this is still a team that only has one top 70 win, given Oregon's struggles in the Pac-12, given that UNLV has fallen off just a little bit, and given that, you know, San Diego State is, you know, on a three-game losing streak right now. So you don't even know if they're going to have a top 70 win by the time February 3rd rolls around even. So they need quality wins more than they need quantity of wins right now. I think that that is the biggest concern that I would have if I was Leon Rice pinning my hopes to an at-large berth.
Sam Vecenie joining us. Follow him on Twitter at @Sam_Vecenie. Not only an expert when it comes to college basketball, really all levels of basketball, including the draft. And Chandler Hutchison, we had on your friend Cole Zwicker on a couple of weeks ago, and he mentioned Hutchison possibly a top 25 guy in this upcoming NBA draft. You've been on Chandler for a while now, so what do you see from him?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Chandler Hutchison. I don't really hide that. You know, I've gotten to meet the kid, and I'm sure that you guys have. He is just elite in terms of character. He is one of the nicest dudes you'll meet. And he's an incredibly hard worker if you talk to anyone around that Boise State program. To go from where he was to where he is now shows an incredible amount of not just physical development, because that's what – you know, Boise State knew was going to be necessary whenever they recruited him out of Southern California, I guess 4 years ago now, maybe going on 5 years ago, whenever they started scouting him. But, you know, it's just the amount of time that he's putting into his craft. He can handle the ball now. He's a much more instinctive passer now. He can shoot the ball, which is something he couldn't really do all that consistently whenever he got to Boise State. You know, I love guys that are on that upward trajectory, right? Guys that have shown that they're going to take time into their craft. They're going to continue to get better year over year over year. You know, I have Hutchison as like a pretty clear top 20 guy on my board right now. I do understand that he's going to be a senior and he's older, and, you know, NBA executives are a little bit worried about that. But you look at what he's got. He's a 6'7" athlete with a 7-foot wingspan, incredible fluidity, can handle the ball, can really, really pass it, is improving as a jump shooter despite the fact that he's probably still a drive-first guy. I just look at that guy, and he looks tailor-made for what the NBA is trying to do right now.
Sam Vecenie joining us of The Athletic and the Game Theory podcast. Before we let you go, a chance to kind of say what you have coming up on The Athletic and what the podcast is all about for those who aren't familiar with it. It really is one of the best basketball podcasts out there.
Oh, thanks. You know, coming up on The Athletic this week, I'll have my Big Ten weekly thing that I write. I have a Pac-12 weekly thing that I write. Then I'm going to be releasing a top 100 NBA draft prospects as well. I would point out that Chandler Hutchison is going to rank pretty highly on that. Like I said, definitely within the top 20. I think that's probably higher than what most people have him right now. So I'm a big fan there. And, you know, I'm going to try and write a couple other things, I think, later this week. But until I get them locked down, I should probably hold off on going ahead and promoting them. But the podcast is called the Game Theory Podcast, and it is on whatever free podcasting app that you use. If you search for that, I'm sure you can find it.
Sam, thanks so much for your time. You've helped make heads or tails out of some of these things and given us a little bit more insight into how they look.
Sure. Thanks, guys.
And that is Sam Vecenie and The Athletic that he works for. Chris, a great collection of writers are covering sports.
Yeah, I'm one of the subscribers of it, and it's definitely, for me, I get a lot different style of writing than it's just generally out there, so I'm all down for it.
And again, coming up at this time, 1:15 tomorrow, we will hear from Boise State sophomore Alex Hobbs about the team coming off the Nevada game, looking ahead to the rest of the season. And up next in the sports update, what did Josh Allen, the former Wyoming quarterback, have to say to his critics at the Senior Bowl? Let's find out next when Idaho Sports Talk continues on Sports Radio The Ticket. Bob and Chris back on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio The Ticket. And Sam Vecenie is maybe taking Cole Zwicker, Chris, on the Chandler Hutchison opinion, even higher.
Yeah, I mean, Chandler Hutchison being an elite prospect, and you know, Sam Vecenie, I think, was almost on the bandwagon before Cole Zwicker was. So, you know, Sam has did it back really the last couple of years. I remember when we were talking about James Webb last year around draft time. He was talking about Chandler around, I guess it was two years ago draft time. Yeah, he was talking about Chandler Hutchison around that period of time as somebody who possibly could hop on the draft radar, and he was kind of right about that. So, yeah, he's certainly been on the ground floor of the Hutchison bandwagon. Kind of wanted to get into the one thing he mentioned, though, about the RPI versus BPI versus the KenPom. And from what it made it seem like, he values KenPom, and that's probably the, you know, most valuable way to evaluate teams from a numbers standpoint. But it almost seemed like that was taken into account the least. And the RPI, which he pointed out some of the flaws of it, it doesn't really value road win and neutral wins and where the game was played as much as the others. But he thinks that that is still held in higher regard than some of the other ones that are probably more indicative of how good teams actually are. So I found that to be a little odd.
And by not valuing road and neutral wins a little bit higher, I think it hurts the mid-majors because so many times they have to play the major on the major's court because the other ones won't come to your place. So I think more should be given if somebody goes on the road and knocks somebody off. I think it's an incentive for the schools that they're not going to give you a home and home. So if you go to their place and win, that should be worth almost like 2-1.
Yeah, that's a very good point on that one. Although it seems to me that the RPI, the one that doesn't value where the game was played as much, seems to have mid-major teams higher than BPI and KenPom does. So I'm still struggling with that one.
We'll start this Ticket Sports Update with some Boise State news. Chris Ross, who worked for Boise State as the director of program development, had responsibilities like working with coaching staff and focusing on recruiting players and player development, has been hired as the new football coach for Red Oaks High School in Texas. Ross had worked here for 2 years, coming from the high school ranks, and now he is returning. Well, Josh Allen's draft preparation is underway at the Senior Bowl. He'll participate for the North Side and the Denver Broncos coaching staff this Sunday. Allen had his first media session and addressed concerns about his accuracy, playing at lower competition levels in the Mountain West, and if he would be willing to play for the Cleveland Browns. And this is what he had to say.
I'm way more accurate than that shows. And, you know, that's what I'm cleaning up in this offseason to show everybody, you know, come practice time that I've been working on that. And, you know, the key to my accuracy is making sure my feet are set right and just trying to have a more, you know, polished throwing motion. You know, it's not about going as high as possible. It's going as high as possible to the right team. So if I'm not the right fit for the Browns, that's fine with me. I understand that, you know, some people fit schemes differently. If I'm a better fit somewhere else and I belong at that other place. So it's not about getting drafted high for me. It's about, you know, getting, like I said, drafted to the right team. Obviously coming from Wyoming and not playing against, you know, the greatest competition week in and week out, I don't think that has anything to do with, you know, football IQ, and I want them to understand that I have a high football IQ and I love this game. You know, there's one thing about me. I do love the game of football, and this is the only thing I've ever wanted, you know, for my entire life is to be an NFL quarterback. Getting to come here and compete with, you know, the Heisman winner, Baker Mayfield, it's going to be fun. You know, haven't met him yet. I know he's not here yet, but, you know, he's a dude that can obviously make all the throws. He's done a lot of great things, and obviously his teammates respect him a lot, so you know, getting the chance to meet him, throw with him, talk with him, and kind of push each other is going to be fun this week.
Person I'd love to hear at the podium with a question that I don't know that he'd want to answer is Wyoming coach Craig Bohl. I would love to have him compare Josh Allen with Carson Wentz, having coached them both at this stage of their career. What he thinks of both of them, what he thinks their upside is, what he thinks their negatives are. I think that would be a fascinating answer.
Yeah, doesn't he owe it, though, to compare it favorably? I always feel like the college coach owes it. Like, he put it on the line for you and helped you get paid. And I think Bull got an extension while Josh Allen was at Wyoming. So he had a responsibility, or he had an impact on you getting more money. So you should go out and help him. Like, you should not ever do the Brian Kelly and badmouth him and say he's not ready. If you help make money off of him, you owe it to return the favor and help maximize that guy's earning potential when it comes to him at the next level. I know Josh Allen, I think he's polarizing around here. You know, some people don't like the fact that, you know, Wyoming got a lot of attention at the expense of Boise State, people seem like. While he was in this conference, and some people are rooting for him because it would make the conference look good. And I kind of look at it from a different type of perspective is, you know, not every quarterback gets the benefit of the doubt of not having really high level of production, but still being thought of a first round, not even just first round, but a first overall pick. So, like, that makes me uncomfortable for, you know, somebody who completed 56% of his passes, his best season, he threw 15 interceptions, and yet he is still considered an elite-level prospect. I don't think everybody would get that same wiggle room. So that's the only, maybe not the only, but that's the main reason why I have taken a more negative tone on Josh Allen than a lot of other people have. But, you know, I'm not really going to root against somebody's success. I just sometimes am more upset about the process that allows somebody like him to be given the doubt that not everybody else would be given.
Well, talking about quarterbacks, the Dallas Cowboys have yet to announce their new quarterback coach, though it might be coming sooner than we think. Son of the owner, Jerry Jones, Stephen Jones, was on the Hanging with the Boys podcast and had this to say about the team's quarterback coach position.
Paul Alexander Bengals coach for years and years. Is anybody else that we've brought in?
Well, we brought in Sanjay Lau.
Okay, so we do have the
receivers coach.
Yes, sir.
He's all signed up, and we're real close to getting Kellen Moore penciled in as quarterback coach.
Okay.
Wow. I'd say if Jerry Jones' son is saying things like that, it's probably going to happen.
Well, it's not like the Joneses have a filter. I mean, it wouldn't be the first time that they said something that didn't actually come to be in the case, but... that report was now, what, like 3 weeks ago that Kellen Moore was going to be their quarterback coach, and we really haven't had an update after that?
Nope. That's the closest update we've got.
I mean, you look at a lot of head coaches are getting filled mostly by assistants from other teams. I'm wondering, you know, the Cowboys coordinator stayed, head coach stayed. I'm wondering why they haven't done anything faster.
And finally, Josh Allen was talking about if the Browns would be the right fit for him. Well, there'll be a new fit for the Cleveland Browns. They have announced that they'll have a new offensive coordinator this year. The Browns will hire former Steelers offensive coordinator Todd Haley to the same position for the team. Haley will also be calling plays for the Browns, something Hugh Jackson had done for the last 2 years. Haley's contract was not renewed by the Steelers following a 45-42 loss to the Jaguars in the divisional round of the playoffs.
He'll get to see the Steelers twice as the offensive coordinator for the Browns. And something tells me if the Browns are somehow able to upset the Steelers once out of the two times, I think Haley's going to be absolutely thrilled.
What does it mean to buy Brown stock? Like, I think I'm almost ready to invest in the Cleveland Browns. Does that say, like, am I vindicated if they get 4 wins? Like, they have combined for 1 win over the last 2 years. If I buy my Brown stock now and they get 4 wins, I feel like I'm getting 4 times the investment, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm getting four. I'm buying the Brown stock right now. I think they have a pretty good roster. I didn't like their game calling from the offensive game plan standpoint, but if they bring in Todd Haley, who I really like as an offensive coordinator, I like his style. They go vertical. They go down the field. He always has, it seems like, a dependable running game to go along with it. I think they're going to go after Terrell Pryor pretty hard in the offseason. He only signed a 1-year deal with Washington. He was on Cleveland before that, and it seemed like it worked. It did not work in Washington. And if Josh Gordon can come around next season, not get in trouble and be a receiving weapon, all of a sudden that receiving core doesn't look half bad. and they have two picks in the top four, and they have a pretty young roster that has some talented people on it right now anyway. I am buying in Brown stock. Do you think you'll laugh at me in a year?
Well, if you think they're going to just go to three or four wins, I think you got a chance for that. I think if you say they're going to make the playoffs next year, I'd say I think that's a bit of a stretch.
I'm not talking playoffs, but I'm buying in. Put it that way. I like the direction that they're heading. I wish they didn't like fire their GM recently, but I still like the direction that they're going in.
Get your ticket to the Boise Golf and Travel Show Saturday and Sunday. That's February 11th and 12th at Expo Idaho. Every ticket gets you free Eagle Hills round of golf. See and try the newest from 8 golf manufacturers in the Wide World of Golf demo area. You can purchase your tickets online and get a bonus offer from Sun Valley Trail Creek Golf Course and Callaway. Kids 12 and under are free. You can get tickets to the door as well, or go to BoiseGolfShow.com. All sponsored by your local Toyota dealers and Sports Radio The Ticket. Coming up in Quick Hits, we've got four big NBA topics, including what's wrong with the Cavs. That's next on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Quick Hits with Bob and Chris. Topic number one.
A lot of topics in the NBA. Chris is our NBA expert, so we're going to throw them at him and see what he comes up with. All right. Even I know the Cleveland Cavaliers are struggling to the point that they are losing way more games than they are winning. So what in the world is wrong with the Cavs?
Well, they have lost 6 of their past 8. They're now just 27-18, which isn't the standard of a LeBron James team. They're only one game ahead of the Miami Heat for 3rd place in the Eastern Conference. In the process, they've given up an estimate of about 1 million points, you know, give or take here. They've given up a lot of points. Defense has been by far their weakness. So apparently, according to Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN, the Cavs had a fiery team meeting at their practice facility prior to yesterday's practice, where several players challenged the legit nature of Kevin Love's illness that led him to leave the game that they had on Saturday against OKC early and missed practice the next day. So apparently the Cavs thought Kevin Love was like faking it and quitting on the team and wasn't legitimately sick. And Kevin Love had to defend himself at this team meeting and say, "Nah, man, I was actually sick. Don't try to think I was faking it up in here." Now, apparently that meeting had Ty Lue there, Kobe Altman, who's also the GM. On a scale of 1 to 10, where do I rate this in terms of team problems? I'm only going to go with 3 just because of the fact that I feel like every January there is some drama with a LeBron James team, some infighting or some tweet or some Instagram post. It's just a part of the process for them to rally together come February and March, and then they can make their playoff push and sweep a team in the first round in April, then get it all together by the Eastern Conference Finals, and then be in the NBA Finals. I just feel like it's part of the process, but this one just seems a little bit worse than others, and their problems are a little bit more glaring than usual.
Chris, I want to kind of follow it up. Normally speaking, two teams fighting in the same league, American League, National League, or conference, is the way the NBA is broken down. The two contenders generally don't like to trade with one another. Explain to me why Cleveland wanted to ship Irving for Isaiah Thomas, because right now the Cavaliers are 7 games behind the Celtics, and to me the Celtics look the better team.
They thought it was the best deal available for Kyrie. Now, they were set on trading him. You could make the case that they should have just tried to work out the issues, because it looks like they have issues anyway. Wouldn't you rather have issues with Kyrie than issues without Kyrie? But they were dead set on trading him, and they were going to get the best package. And that Nets pick that right now is around number 6 in the draft, but there's not much separation between the worst team and the 7th worst team right now. That was the real prize. That was the best asset on the table for Kyrie Irving. And they pounced at that, even though it was the Boston Celtics. You might have just engineered your biggest contender for the Eastern Conference and made yourself a little bit worse at the same time.
All right.
Topic number 2.
Several other teams are having infighting. It seems like the discontent is more than just Cleveland across the league.
Yeah, right now is that time where it's the dog days of the schedule. You haven't gotten to the All-Star break yet. Plus, the trade deadline is coming up in early February. So if you have any gripes, you probably want to put them on the table right now so the GM can address those before the trade deadline. Damian Lillard, according to Chris Haynes of ESPN, had a meeting with Paul Allen, the owner of the Blazers. He wants to know which direction this franchise is heading, and Paul Allen, according to that report, was afraid that Lillard was going to ask for a trade. Now, trade did not come up, but he did want clarification, according to the report, on what the Blazers are going to do to put a better team around Damian Lillard. I think this is a 7 out of 10, much bigger deal than Cleveland's situation. Because if Damian Lillard gets to the point where he's sick and tired of being neglected for an all-star, we'll see if he's named a reserve today, but it wouldn't be surprising if he is snubbed again. So, all right, he's losing out on being popular, a popular individual athlete because he's playing in Portland, and they're not even a playoff team. I could see him getting upset enough to say, hey, I want out of this situation. Meanwhile, the Wizards yesterday got absolutely blown out by the Mavericks, and the people in Washington are reporting that they have a lot of discontent within the team, that John Wall and Bradley Beal aren't the easiest to get along with. I think they can turn around that situation, but Washington should be a lot better than what they are. And then it was Wojnarowski also reporting yesterday that Kawhi Leonard and the San Antonio Spurs aren't on the same page with his quad injury and the right timeline and the right approach for him to get back in the lineup. I think this is the most manageable situation out of all of them because it's just a product of him getting back on the court. Following the Sixers, I know that injuries are not a definite timeline. There are curves that happen along the way. And if Kawhi Leonard's back, the Spurs will use him correctly and all will be forgiven.
Topic number three.
Jason Kidd was fired by the Milwaukee Bucks. The Bucks are over 500. They are the seventh seed right now in the Eastern Conference. What is Jason Kidd doing to make himself look good in the ousting?
He is leaking the text messages that Giannis Antetokounmpo sent to Jason Kidd when the news broke that he was in danger of being fired. Giannis reportedly reached out to Jason Kidd and offered to save his job or do whatever he could to save his job. And that's just Jason Kidd getting that out there to say, hey, I did not get fired because I can't handle superstars. And that is important for him, who has also said that he is looking for another coaching job at some point down the line. He is making it clear, I do not have some kind of disagreement with my star player. So I see what he's doing there. I don't know if it'll make a difference.
Why did he get fired? I mean, they're in the playoffs right now. Maybe they'd like to be better, but they're going to stick with the assistant. It appears it's taking over for the rest of the season. This, to me, would seem like it would be a team that would be sitting 11th or 12th, not 7th.
Yeah, I would have done it in the offseason. I think stability is an important part for young teams. However, they had not had looked like a well-coached team throughout the year.
Topic number four.
One player is confirmed for the dunk contest. Who are two others you want to see?
The one player that is confirmed is Dennis Smith Jr. He's a rookie out of NC State. He's only 6'1", but he is bouncy. So he'll be fun. He does have some pretty good dunks on people. Two others I want to see. One of them's a Wyoming guy, Larry Nance Jr. I think he has the best in-game dunks in basketball right now. He's just a literal pogo stick, similar to what he was at Wyoming. The other one I want to see is Terrence Ferguson. Doesn't play much for the Oklahoma City Thunder, but he put on a show in L.A. a couple of weeks ago in a game against the Lakers where he had three of the best dunks that you could see within a game. So I want those to win along with Dennis Smith, and you can pick who's the fourth.
You know what they should do? Have you ever seen those songs where sometimes they'll edit a singer that's deceased in with a new singer on the same song? They should use Larry Nance Sr.'s dunks and grade them against what Junior and the other people do. Larry Nance Sr., I believe, won the first NBA dunk contest.
That would be great. I think, have you seen some of these dunks? Like, you again, follow Wyoming. Larry Nance Jr., he can throw down.
Up next, pitchers and catchers report in less than a month. We're going hard baseball with Matt Snyder of CBS on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio The Ticket. We are about 3 weeks away from the glorious term pitchers and catchers report the spring training. Bob and Chris here to talk some baseball. Matt Snyder from CBSSports.com joins us. We've had Matt on numerous times, and he is our baseball expert. And Matt, everybody always excited when pitchers and catchers report, but right now we don't know where a lot of free agents are going to end up signing. It seems like it's been a very quiet offseason. It seems like teams are not offering the money that they have been in the past. So Why do you think this has been the case, and are we all of a sudden going to have a quick speed up and a lot of guys sign?
I mean, a lot of people are using the word collusion, really. Like, all the owners are conspiring to keep player salaries down, and it's true. Ever since the luxury tax level was put in with significant penalties for teams that stay over it, especially when they stay over for consecutive years, player salaries have been gradually decreasing in compared to league revenue. So essentially, the money's still going up. Major League Baseball is making more money every year. The player salaries are becoming less and less a percentage of that revenue, so that means the owners are keeping it. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of fans who care about this just yet, but it's going to get to the point where the players need to push back on this. But that being said, the offseason is not over yet. Maybe we'll see a splurge here. We've heard that J.D. Martinez has a five-year, $125 million offer, and I think that's very reasonable for what he is at his age. Yu Darvish, it seems like the Cubs are in heavy on him. If they give him something like five and 125, I think that's a bargain, but not to the point that the union would have a big-time grievance there. So we'll see, I guess. But, man, I thought by now, even in late December, you just thought, okay, once the new year turns, then players will start coming. Now, okay, well, middle of January, they're a month away from pitchers and catchers. No, I mean, now it's January 23rd, and it just doesn't feel like there's any movement. I mean, we've heard a few things about Yu Darvish in recent days, and again, I talked about that J.D. Martinez report, but other than that, when's the last time you heard anything about Jake Arrieta being connected to anybody? Eric Hosmer, we heard about the Padres connection like a month ago, but other than that, there's nothing. Mike Moustakas, you hear nothing. Lorenzo Cain, you hear nothing. So it's just, it's gotten ridiculous. I mean, we're 3 weeks from pitchers and catchers reporting, and none of these guys are signed. Something's got to happen at some point, obviously, but it's scary when you see something like the Yahoo Sports report from Jeff Passan that said that at least one high-profile free agent said that he's ready to just sit out the season or at least go into the season unsigned and wait until somebody suffers like a key injury and then needs to come to him. So you don't want it to get to that point. We'd like to see them come together a lot quicker than that.
I mean, that's kind of insane. Like, I don't know how this isn't a bigger story. Like, high-profile guys who clearly aren't in the point where they are unemployable from a talent standpoint, to them to sit out a season or sit out part of a season, just seems like it's insane.
And Boris is the agent for most of these guys. We know he doesn't mind coming in January. Maybe it's that, along with teams looking at this luxury tax thing and realizing, hey, we can play chicken with them and make them come to us. It just seems like it's one big game of chicken right now. There are other forces here. It's along with the Dodgers wanting to get under the luxury tax thing. Clayton Kershaw has not that after next year. The Dodgers obviously want to stay under the luxury tax and go after Clayton Kershaw. So if they're out, well, they're one of the teams that drives prices up. The Yankees, they need to stay under the luxury tax. They're getting close to it. So if they're out, they're one of the teams that drives the prices up. The next big spender would be the Cubs. So it's you can kind of see where without those bidders, and if the Cubs are really serious about making a run at Bryce Harper next year, why maybe they're not ready to splurge on anybody, then you start to get down to the point where the Twins and Brewers have a real shot at those guys, and maybe they should pony up and do whatever it takes to get it done.
Do you think that a lot of teams are saving money for next year? There's what? Kershaw's going to be in the hopper, Harper, several others of that caliber.
Manny Machado? Josh Donaldson. Yeah. I think that they're looking at this class compared to next class and the luxury tax. It's a confluence of factors, along with the realization that a lot of these deals, in years past, teams, like, let's take the Albert Pujols contract, 10 years, $240 million. The Angels knew, or they had to have known, they're not stupid, I would hope, the last 3 or 4 years of that are going to be dead, so you're paying for the first 5 or 6. I think teams are coming to the realization now that everybody's kind of thinking, why would we say we'll give you 10 just to get you for 6 when we can just offer 6 and nobody else is going to offer more than 6 anymore? It's gotten to that point where everybody is realizing, hey, we don't need to offer those extra 3 or 4 years just to get somebody. Now we can just offer them the year that we want them. And the players are saying, wait a minute. I've been looking at free agency my whole career, and now I'm finally here, and you're telling me I have to take four or five when I thought I was getting eight?
It seems like to me this whole salary structure is flawed in a way to where I'm looking at the ages of these guys who are free agents, 30, 31, 31, 31. That's Martinez, Darvish, Kane, and Arrieta, the guys who are still on the board. And they don't have the opportunity to get that big contract when they're in their mid to maybe early late, if that makes any sense, 27, 28 years old. Then when they're like 31, they're to the point where, well, yeah, we don't want to offer the big contract. So how do you fix this is the question is, how do you – like Ohtani was 23 and he signed right away because, of course, you're going to want to get out and get a 23-year-old free agent. But these 31-year-old guys, nobody's going to really want to pay for a 31-year-old when it seems like the sport is dominated by guys before the age of 25 right now.
Yes. The system worked a lot better in the so-called steroid era when guys were productive into their late 30s. Nowadays, you're getting guys pretty much done with their above-average value by age 34, 35, and teams are wanting to go more young, especially because those guys are cheaper now. So they need to find a way. I mean, the players don't even have to be paid more than the league minimum through their third full year. And then they go into arbitration. And Chris Bryant just set a record in arbitration, but it's still only, again, it's relative to the baseball world, he's only going to make like $11 million a year. Well, Chris Bryant, he's worth 25 to 30 if he hits free agency. So they need to find a way to move the needle backward to maybe players hit free agency after 3 years, or maybe say restricted free agency. For example, if Bryant hit free agency right now, somebody would surely offer him $300 to $350 million at his age. Then the Cubs would have the opportunity to match that, and if they match it, they get to keep them. So I think maybe they need to do something like that because of how much younger things are skewing. I mean, you're going to get outliers in there like Bryce Harper and Manny Machado because they came up when they were 19, hitting free agency in the middle of their 20s. They're still going to get it huge. But you're somebody like Jake Arrieta, who was a late bloomer. Now all of a sudden he's kind of getting screwed by the market because he's north of 30 already. He doesn't have that much mileage on his arm. He could very well still be productive come age 35 or 36, but teams aren't willing to bet on that.
Matt Snyder joining us from CBSSports.com talking baseball. A couple other topics I want to get to quickly. What's going to end up happening in this pace of play? Are the owners going to get everything they want? Couple things coming in. What's going to happen when we open in April?
Well, Manfred can unilaterally put in anything he wants as long as he offers it a year ahead of time. So he'll offer something up. The union declines it. He just has to wait 1 year, then he can implement it. So he's going to get his way. I think the union is starting to push back a lot more now because of their concerns with the salary thing. And unfortunately, come 2021, when the CBA is up, we might have some ugliness. Hopefully not. Hopefully the two sides start to work together better before then. But it looks like that Manfred's going to get everything he wants. The pitch clock. I'll say this. I don't know how many people have been to minor league games where the pitch clock is in, but you really don't notice it. And the guys work faster. The first year it was in, they shaved 7 minutes average off the game times. That's not just carrying everything, but every little bit counts. And I do think that the mound visits needed to be limited anyway. I wrote about that during the 2016 postseason. I wrote about it again last year. The mound visits have gotten unbelievably excessive in the playoffs. The deeper you go, the more mound visits there are by the catcher. And the World Series is when everybody's watching. Casual fans are tuning in. Look, baseball is not going to lose diehards, but the casual fans are the ones you want to retain. And when they turn to the World Series and Brian McCann has six mound visits in the first two innings, the people who hardly watch baseball are going, I don't want to watch this crap. So they can get on the same page. We don't need to see mound visits. I've seen some diehard fans pushing back and saying we don't need to rush through the game. Well, you're not rushing if you're saying pitch the ball within 20 seconds. That's not rushing. And limit your mound visits to one per inning. That's not rushing. That's just saying let's not excessively delay things.
I love how you mentioned Brian McCann. He almost stands for everything I don't like about baseball sometimes. And you just brought him up. But he's a champion now, so I can't really say anything bad about him. Matt Snyder joining us, baseball writer for CBSSports.com. Now, another thing that's coming up pretty soon is this Hall of Fame new class. Now, I guess a two-part. What do you think will and what do you think should be the case for the Hall of Fame coming up?
I think we're going to see a four-man class. It looks like Chipper, Vlad, and Tomei are going to get in easily over 90%, and it looks like Hoffman's going to hold a few percentage points above the line. Looks like Edgar's going to be close, but need to wait until next year, which is his final year, and that has to be nerve-wracking. But I think he's gotten enough momentum going that he's going to get in next year. And I'm good with all that. I think Mussina is making good gains, and he definitely should be in. Schilling, it looks like he's got positive momentum. I wrote about the character clause and how I don't think we should hold players' words against them, in which case I think he should be in as well. I think he's an obvious one. Bonds and Clemens, that's going to come down to your preference on PEDs. I don't think that they're going to get in. I think that they have decent momentum, but it doesn't look like they're gaining enough. We'll see when we see the vote totals tomorrow. I think they need to be around 60% for a realistic chance to make it eventually. My stance, and I know a lot of people disagree, is if the game didn't care to test about PEDs, and Bud Selig's in the Hall of Fame, by the way, as are managers like Tony La Russa and Joe Torre, who benefited from guys who supposedly used PEDs, then I don't care about it in terms of Hall of Fame voting. I'm going to judge what I saw on the field. Once they put a testing system in place, now I'm going to count it. Manny Ramirez is on this ballot. I'm a no on him because he failed at least two tests that we know about once there was a suspension system in place. So I think we're on the right track. The ballot has been way too crowded for years. If you look at, historically speaking, decade by decade, the percentage of players in each game who are Hall of Famers, it's drastically lower once you get to the 70s, 80s, 90s, and obviously 2000s, because we haven't had to deal with that yet. So people saying the Hall of Fame is becoming watered down, people will say it tomorrow when four guys get in. They will. They're wrong. They're ignorant to the subject. It's actually totally watered down if you go 1950 and previous. We need to catch up to that. More players from today's game relatively recently should be getting in, and we're starting to do it. You had a big class last year. We're going to have a big class this year. I think next year, Mariano Rivera, Roy Halladay, sadly, he's going to miss that, are definitely going to get in. I think Mussina's got enough momentum. He's got a chance next year. I think Edgar's definitely going to get in next year. So we're going to have a good 3 years here where we got a lot of guys in and cleared a lot of ballot space.
Matt, thanks so much. Always fascinating talking with you, and I'm sure we'll get back to you before spring training.
All right. Have a good one, guys.
And that is Matt Snyder. Great stuff. And Chris and I will be back to take a look at some of the things that Matt said. We'll give you who we think you're going to get in the Hall of Fame, who we think, maybe more importantly, should get into the Hall of Fame. Hit KTIK.com to win some grub and a scrub for the big game. Westside Drive-In will provide a big game feast for up to 15 people. And Molly Maid will come by to clean up the kitchen and viewing area afterwards. Register at KTIK.com now. It's the big game grub and scrub giveaway brought to you by Westside Drive-In, Molly Maid, and Sports Radio The Ticket. Don't forget tomorrow at 2 o'clock in the same time slot that Matt Snyder was in, our next installment of Huddle Up with Harse. Coach Brian Harsin drops by every Wednesday at 2. And again, what do we think of pace of play, free agents, and the Hall of Fame next on Sports Radio The Ticket. I love talking baseball with Matt Snyder, Bob, and Chris back on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio The Ticket. A lot of baseball subjects for a mid-January. The free agency to me is fascinating. There are some good players that are out there, but for whatever reason, whether it's collusion, whether it's saving money for next year for an alleged A-class, there's a lot of players that could make differences for teams, Chris, right now that are unsigned and right now not even appear to be on radar for teams.
Like, you can't have a season start when J.D. Martinez, Yu Darvish, although he'll probably be on the team for what it sounds like, Lorenzo Cain, Jake Arrieta, Eric Hosmer, Mike Moustakas, Alex Cobb, Lance Lynn, Todd Frazier. Like, they're not on teams right now.
I mean, could Kansas City, in the end, get Hosmer back on a deal and then get Moustakas and Cain back for one-year deals? I mean, you'd have thought all three of them would be walking from Kansas City. You know, I don't know if Kansas City's even in the mix for those players to retain them. Shame on them if you could get them back on your team, you know, if it isn't overly priced. This isn't like the Yankees or the Dodgers or somebody comes in and just overpays. You know, Kansas City needs to be trying to sign their old guys.
Yeah, I mean, do they, though?
Like, I don't think they will.
Well, do they want to? Like, they're an organization that really does value the playing time for young players. And that's the one thing that, like, there's a trend in baseball. Like, the Astros followed it. The Cubs followed it. Where they got young players while they were really early in what is considered baseball development, major league experience. And it paid off. So if you buy, if you go and pay for Moustakas and Hosmer, you're just clogging up spots that, I mean, I don't know their specific plans. I don't know their farm system. I don't know who their first base, what their first base depth chart and their third base depth chart is. But like the Astros went and showed you, getting young guys that experience early on in their careers pays off. So like what I brought up to Matt Snyder, I really believe is that the, for the player right now, the cycle is against them. For you can't get your money while you're valuable, and by the time you're able to get your money, you're just not considered as valuable anymore. And that needs to change. Like, they need to figure that out. Like, we've gotten to the point where it's a major problem when, like, half, more than half of the top 10 available free agents aren't signed, and the season starts in, the season, as in quote unquote pitchers and catchers, they report in 3 weeks, and I think this hurts the sport. I wanted, the hot stove used to be the stuff where you'd have like a week period, 1 week where boom, this big free agent just signed, and boom, this big name just got traded, and boom, here's another big free agent signing. The NBA is kind of capitalized off of that. July 4th weekend is when they have their big free agency extravaganza, and one guy signs and another big name signs, and there's a whole period of a week and a half where the news cycle is dominated by transactions. Sports, one of the biggest things that gets the clicks and gets the attention are transactions, trade deadline, free agency. That is huge, maybe more now than it ever has been. And for baseball to just kind of punt free agency, and that's what happened, you can't have that.
But in some ways, the Players Association exacerbates this, because the people that run the Players Association, as far as the players that have the loudest voice, are the older players. And the older players in any organization, NFL, NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball, are going to design rules that are going to help the players that are in the level of where they are in their career, the people who are running the organization. That's why whenever there is a concession to be given, it's always given to the draftees, the rookies. Those people don't have a voice in the union yet, so a player is going to battle for something that benefits an older veteran player before it is going to be somebody that's going to be an up-and-comer. So I don't see the Players Association doing something that is going to help people in their third year at the expense of somebody in their sixth or seventh year, because the people on the board are the people in the sixth and seventh years.
Yeah, but at a certain point, money to the players has to be valued. And right now, whether it's collusion or whether it's not, teams have decided it is just not smart for us to be handing out those Albert Pujols contracts anymore. So if, like, I understand having the system set up for the players to get them, but if the owners stop giving out those contracts and just are keeping the money, now none of the players are winning with that. Like, zero of the players, not the young players and not the old players. So, like, if there's a choice between, all right, younger guys in their mid-20s get money or nobody get money, I feel like the choice for the Players Association and the Players Union has to be, all right, let's have the players in their 20s get money versus nobody getting money, if you understand the
point.
Well,
the problem with the long-term contract is, as Matt Snyder said, the Angels or anybody that signs somebody to a 10-year deal can't expect years 7, 8, 9, and 10 to be as productive as the early part of the contract.
Well, you can if you get it at 25. Well, you can if you get that contract
but,
at 25.
But at the age that you signed Pujols, no.
Yeah, no. Absolutely not. And so if they're not going to hand those out to guys in their 30s, either you have to change the game so guys in their mid-20s can get paid, or you have to, I don't know, what is the second choice? I think you have to change the game for guys in their mid-20s to get paid. And, it's the whole arbitration thing. Like, Chris Bryant, it was a great example that Matt brought up, made $12 million, which, okay, you're like, oh, I'll take $12 million, but no, that's not your market value. $12 million is nowhere near your market
value. I like
his
idea of limited free agency in the sense that you can hit free agency maybe from years 3 to 6. But if the team that has you wants to keep you, they have a right to match. So the other teams can help set your market and make you pay more. Like if the Dodgers had somebody, you know, that they wanted to keep, Bellinger, let's say, that was a rookie this year, in a couple of years, the Giants or the Rockies or the Diamondbacks could force the Dodgers to pay more to keep him, or he could lose him. I think that would be a, something that would be worthwhile to the organizations that they could keep the guys, but they'd have to pay them more at market rate.
Yeah, I think the perception with that will be the Yankees will take advantage of that just because, all right, they're going to make a team like the Marlins, and I'm using this example fully knowing that they took away Giancarlo Stanton for nothing, and Derek Jeter's out here in the Marlins organization torpedoing the franchise. But, like, a franchise in a position of the Marlins, like, they're not going to be able to match a restricted free agency offer that within a non-salary cap sport, and I understand the luxury tax, but in a non-salary cap sport, for you to be able to make an offer that another team has to match or else they're gone, I can see the danger in that.
Yeah.
You know, like all the other sports that have restricted free agency, by my checking, they have also a salary cap that does provide a bit of a buffer there. If you have a restricted free agency in a sport without a salary cap, I have no idea how that would go. It doesn't seem like it'd be smooth, though.
And again, tomorrow is the night at 6 o'clock. I think it's 6 Eastern, but maybe it's 6 Mountain. Major League Baseball will announce the Hall of Fame class for 2018. Matt Snyder said he thinks there's going to be four guys getting in. Chipper Jones, who to me is a lock. Vlad Guerrero, Jim Thome, to me, probables. Trevor Hoffman, he thinks is probably going to get in, is a probable. I agree with him on the Bonds and Clemens. They didn't test. The owners looked the other way. People who benefited from steroid users are in the Hall of Fame. I think they should get in. And to me, I'm looking for that writer because I know there's going to be one out there that's going to vote for one of Bonds or Clemens or not the other. And to me, that person should lose their votes. You're either for them or against them. But I would be for them. I think their numbers are getting up. I think they'll eventually get in, but I think we're going to wait a little while for those guys.
I would love to see somebody try to explain voting for Clemens and not voting for Bonds or vice versa. Like, how do you explain that one? One's a Hall of Famer, one's not without performance-enhancing drug. There's really nothing you can do to explain that one. I will say, and this is another baseball nugget that came out today, Alex Rodriguez looks like he's going to get the Sunday Night Baseball booth, replacing Aaron Boone. And they're also, Dan Schulman's out, so they have a little bit of reshuffling in the ESPN Sunday Night Baseball booth. So it looks like A-Rod's doing Sunday Night Baseball while keeping his Fox gig for the playoffs of being able to be on that set. I'm telling you, A-Rod's putting himself in the Hall of Fame. He's going to do it. If it's not as a player, it's going to be as a media dude. Because he really is one of those guys where you want to watch him, at least on the desk. I don't know what he is like calling games. I haven't seen that as much. But on the desk, he's really engaging. He's going to turn himself into a well-liked enough figure where he's going to get into the Hall of Fame.
And I think A-Rod will probably be pretty good on the games, too. What he's done on the desk or in the studio on those shows, I think he has been outstanding. I've enjoyed listening to him, and I think he's very charismatic, and we'll see how he works with the Matt Vasgersian, who is also coming over from Fox. Is Matt staying with Fox, too?
I don't know. I didn't see that one.
But he's going to be the play-by-play guy. Jessica Mendoza and Buster Olney are staying as well on the coverage. Make plans to join Sports Radio The Ticket at the big game party at Dave and Buster's a week from Sunday. Somebody's going to win a 3-day, 2-night stay at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas. The winner will be announced at halftime with Caves, JP, and the Ticket Chick. Win a 3-day, 2-night stay at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino, $300 at the MB Steakhouse, and a pair of VIP joint concert passes. The big game at Dave and Buster's off Milwaukee a week from Sunday coming up with Sports Radio The Ticket. Up next in the sports update, what will look quite similar to the last night the Patriots, or excuse me, the last time the Patriots and Eagles played in the Super Bowl? That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Start the Ticket Sports Update with a little Josh Allen update. Josh Allen, of course, at the Senior Bowl making preparations. He'll play for the North squad on Sunday under the Denver Broncos coaching staff. He had his first media session today, and he addressed some concerns about his accuracy, potentially playing for the Cleveland Browns and competing at a lower level in the Mountain West Conference.
I'm way more accurate than that shows, and you know, that's what I'm cleaning up in this offseason to show everybody, you know, come practice time, that I've been working on that. And you know, the key to my accuracy is making sure my feet are set right and trying to have a more you know, polished throwing motion. You know, it's not about going as high as possible. It's going as high as possible to the right team. So if I'm not the right fit for the Browns, that's fine with me. I understand that. You know, some people fit schemes differently. If I'm a better fit somewhere else, and I belong at that other place. So it's not about getting drafted high for me. It's about, you know, getting, like I said, drafted to the right team. Obviously, coming from Wyoming and not playing against, you know, the greatest competition week in and week out, I don't think that has anything to do with you know, football IQ, and I want them to understand that I have a high football IQ and I love this game. You know, there's one thing about me. I do love the game of football, and this is the only thing I've ever wanted, you know, for my entire life, is to be an NFL quarterback.
We'll see where he goes. I think he's a good quarterback, but I don't know what I've seen would lead me to believe that he should be drafted that high.
Yeah, number one is where Mel Kiper had him, and you can see the look the part, but I'm always leery of, okay, does the production at least come into line with that? And as Mel Kiper says, well, let's just ignore the stats. Stats don't matter. I don't think Mel Kiper should be the one saying stats don't matter, by the way, because he's the kind of guy who has to tell you a bunch of stats between now and the end of the draft. And if stats don't matter, then all of a sudden, what is his job going to be for the next couple of months? Yeah, I've made my stance clear. I hope he finds the right team, and I'm not rooting against him personally. I just think that there is a certain type of guy who gets the benefit of the doubt of overlooking production when you just look the part, and not every person gets that same benefit of the doubt. So once the same people get the same benefit of the doubt, okay, I'll be more, let's say, on board with this process. Again, less of a problem with Josh Allen and more of a problem with the entire process of who we build up and who we don't build up.
Well, one of the guys that Josh Allen has been compared to several times and will be compared to is Carson Wentz. Of course, Wentz will probably be on the sideline. Super Bowl 52 between the Patriots and the Eagles. Though one thing will look similar to the last time the two teams met. New England Patriots announced today that they will wear their road white uniform since they are the home team for the game. They get a pick first. Patriots are 3-1 all-time in Super Bowls when they were white, and 12 of the last 13 teams to wear white in the Super Bowl have won, a streak that started when the Patriots wore white and beat the Eagles back in 2005.
But you said it's about 50-50 as far as whether the team in white was the favorite coming in, because I was wondering if the team in white was the team that was allegedly the better team. The favorite is what you said, 50-50?
Yeah, they're 6-6 all time. The not talking about covering, just straight up, but yeah, it's 50-50. So white apparently is the game changer.
And that means the Eagles will get to call the coin toss because they'll be the visiting team in the game. So I guess the fans in Philly, Chris, can maybe vote on whether they want them to be heads or tails.
Well, I think, that'd be interesting. I think they should do that. It's all, everything social media these days. Let's put a Twitter poll out, so the Eagles call heads or tails. I think that's fantastic.
And then if they miss, they can blame the fans for calling
exactly
the wrong thing.
Yeah, how about the team blaming the fans instead of the fans blaming the team all the time? Let's kind of throw it back in the fans' face. Hey, you got it wrong. Yeah. The team could have that kind of level of power. But how about this? I'm sure the Eagles will sign up for this. The Patriots can sign up to wear whatever jerseys. They can wear all white. Like, they don't have to wear an ounce of color in their jersey if Tom Brady doesn't play. You know, if white is really the game changer that you guys say it is, the Eagles might sign up for the idea that, Patriots, you can pick whatever uniform style you want. Bright white. It could be the whitest of white that you have ever seen. But you have to sit down Tom Brady. Do you think the Patriots agree to that?
I think that's the Patriots' single biggest advantage over the Eagles. They're not doing that in a million years.
Well, LeVar Ball will get his shot at coaching on an international level tonight. The father of LiAngelo and LaMelo Ball has been named an assistant for their team's game in Lithuania as part of the Big Baller Challenge, which pits the team against similar age competition to the two Ball brothers and does not count towards the standings. Team 4-16 in the real Lithuanian league when the Ball brothers play limited minutes. However, 3-0 in the Big Baller Challenge, as it's being called, where the brothers average 41 points a game combined. And LeVar Ball will be an assistant coach for the game tonight.
And how many games will it be until he's the head coach of that team?
They're 4-16. Why not change?
I was just meaning
might take over. Yeah.
This isn't real basketball, though. This isn't like their main league. This is basically the G League affiliate of the Lithuanian basketball team that they're on. This isn't real basketball. And, LeVar Ball could do whatever he wants at this level. The more I've heard, like, the less, of a chance that these guys have to be, forget about, like, legitimate NBA players, but to really be earning a living of playing basketball. It just seems like you took LaMelo off of the right path from being a guy who could maybe have a path to having a career in professional basketball. Still seems like unless you're uberly talented, it can make it work overseas to the NBA. the college route is still the best route for exposure and development, unless you already have – they already have exposure, I guess. But from the development angle, it's just not what you would want for somebody as young as he is.
I think it was a mistake for both of them. The middle guy was not supposed to be a real good prospect, and LeVar takes him off of a UCLA team. You know, going to college is great. Getting, you know, a degree is great, especially for kids that, you know, the majority of kids aren't going on to the pros. Maybe the Ball kids would, maybe they wouldn't. But once again, I think LeVar Ball makes a decision that was not good for the kids.
I think LeVar, like, whatever his idea was with this, like, league for high school seniors or, like, a prep league or whatever he was considering, he needs to go down that road of finding a way, whether it's hiring the right people, though, who really wants to work for LeVar Ball, which his track record of, you know, running something that's stable. I don't really think it's a great one. But he needs to talk to people and to build the relationships to try and do this league after high school, but before you are a professional, and see if you can pay people to be in that and find the right financial model for it. Because that is his best chance. He has the exposure, but can he yield the right development people and the talent for that to be a reality and the money along with it?
So in other words, the Boise Hawks, a short season team with kids that a lot of them signed out of high school play in minor league baseball. Like minor leagues in baseball. College is not for everyone. And maybe you're right. Maybe that's what they need to do. In other words, you don't put them right in the G League with a lot of older guys, but there's something else that's more developmental. That may be the way to go, but I just don't know. I don't think he'd have the money to bankroll it to get it started.
Well, speaking of basketball, Kobe Bryant's basketball career ended a few years ago, but apparently he's already found a new, more successful career. Kobe Bryant had a short animated film named Dear Basketball based off a poem that he wrote in the Players Tribune when he retired. That film was nominated, one of the five films nominated for the Academy Award for Best Animated Short Film. So you could have Oscar winner Kobe Bryant in the coming months.
You don't want to get me started in the whole Academy Awards process of the nominations of the winners and why that whole process is problematic in itself. But the fact that Kobe Bryant could win a Academy Award, that would be something else you could brag about, I suppose.
Nine movies nominated for Best Picture. Guys, I've seen three.
Are you trying to see all nine? Before
I never try to do that. I'm just saying some years I've seen zero. So this year I've seen three. I've seen Darkest Hour, Dunkirk, and The Post.
Have you seen more since you've been married? Is that like a
clear... A little bit more, I think. Okay, yeah, I would say yes to the answer to that. And to me, it would be between of the ones I've seen, Dunkirk and Darkest Hour. They were both really, really good, but very, very different. One of them was more cerebral. The other one, you felt like you were on the beaches at Dunkirk. I think Dunkirk's going to win, and I think the actor that portrayed Winston Churchill is going to win as well.
Has Teresa seen more than you have?
Since we've been married? No, we usually go together.
Like this year, in this cycle?
No, I don't. It would have to be by one, because I don't think she's gone. I know I haven't gone to the movies without her. Maybe I'll have to ask.
You're on the road a lot more than she is.
So maybe she has. Yes, yeah. Yeah,
I'll say maybe if she could come on here and give the breakdown that we all need.
I think we probably need somebody that's seen all nine of them probably to give the breakdown. But Super Bowl will be on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Super Bowl pregame show will start at noon a week from Sunday. And the game itself kickoff at 4:30. Kevin Harlan, Boomer Esiason. Wonder how many movies they've seen. They'll have The Call of the Eagles and Patriots. And if you can't watch it, be sure to listen to it right here on Sports Radio, 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket. Up next, we've got a lot of things we learned today. Sam Vecenie on all the RPI, BPI stuff in college basketball, and Matt Snyder on Major League Baseball. We'll find out what the best things were that they told us next when we come back on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Get your tickets for the Boise Golf and Travel Show Saturday and Sunday, February 11th and 12th at Expo Idaho. Every ticket will get a free Eagle Hills round of golf. See and try the newest from eight golf manufacturers in the wide world of golf demo area. You can purchase online and get a bonus offer from Sun Valley Trail Creek Golf Course and Callaway. Kids 12 and under are free. You can get your tickets at the door or by going to BoiseGolfShow.com. It's all sponsored by your local Toyota dealers and Sports Radio, The Ticket.
And it's time to find out what we learned on Idaho Sports Talk today with Bob and Chris. It's brought to you by Prime Sports, your full-service pro shop and bowling specialist. High-quality bowling balls, bags, and accessories located right inside West East Garden Lanes in Garden City. First up today, we got to talk to Sam Vecenie. He's the college basketball writer for The Athletic and host of the Game Theory podcast. And some of the latest bracket projections out there have Boise State one of the last four teams in. So we asked Sam, what does Boise State need to do to finish off this season if they want to keep their hopes of an at-large bid alive?
They still are without a top 50 win, which is going to make it obviously exceedingly difficult going forward. I think that that means they probably, you know, have to beat Nevada at home on February 14th to really get a lot of consideration for an at-large berth. Even beyond that, this is still a team that only has one top 70 win, given Oregon's struggles in the Pac-12, given that UNLV has fallen off just a little bit. And given that, you know, San Diego State is, you know, on a three-game losing streak right now.
So, Chris, reading between the lines, if we're to believe Sam Vecenie, does Boise State have to win out in the regular season to get an at-large?
Yeah. Right? Like, they can't afford any more
so
losses.
Let's say they win Nevada and you get your top 25 win or whatever they're ranked, you know, at the end of the time. But let's say you go to San Diego and that's the only game you lose the rest of the way. Do you lose more for the San Diego loss than you pick up on the Nevada win?
No, I think San Diego State is probably the best loss that you can have, quote-unquote best loss, going forward because you just need to win Nevada to get that top 50. And he was referencing in the KenPom rankings, by the way, by saying top 50 because that was one of the things in the heart of our conversation was BPI versus RPI versus KenPom and what's valuable and what you measure. And Sam was saying if he was a part of the committee that, you know, KenPom would be something that he weighs a lot heavier than a lot of the other metrics. And Boise State from the KenPom rankings do not have a top 50 KenPom win. So, yeah, Nevada would certainly be it. And I think that is right now, you can't look ahead to Valentine's Day yet. You still have a lot of games in between. But San Diego State is the only hiccup that you might be able to afford without it showing up on the bad loss category and really hurting a lot of your metrics. But Nevada winning that game in itself is going to be difficult at home. So like, to assume that that'll go Boise State's way is a large step. And then also conference tournament time. Like, you could face San Diego State again. You could face Nevada again. So how does that all shake out?
We also got to talk to Matt Snyder. He's the baseball writer for CBS Sports. The Baseball Hall of Fame class is going to be revealed tomorrow. And we got Snyder's day early prediction on what he thinks is going to happen in the Baseball Hall of Fame class for this year.
We're going to see a four-man class. It looks like Chipper, Vlad, and Tomei are going to get in easily over 90%. And it looks like Hoffman's going to hold a few percentage points above the line. Looks like Edgar's going to be close, but need to wait until next year, which is his final year, and that has to be nerve-wracking. But I think he's gotten enough momentum going that he's going to get in next year. And I'm good with all that.
And then the one thing he did add is he was in favor of Bonds and Clements. I'm in favor of it. I think they're going to fall just short, but I think they're going to get more votes than they got last year is my prediction.
Yeah, I hope they get more, and I hope they eventually get in because those are among the best baseball players that I have seen. And the points that you guys bring up with, you know, people who have managed those guys are in the Hall of Fame.
The commissioner.
The commissioner is all in the Hall of Fame, largely based on the revenue that has been generated because of the players who have used steroids. So everybody else can benefit off of that, but the players themselves have to be punished. I mean, while some people say, yeah, that's absolutely what should be the case. They should be punished. They were the ones who made the choice. Those were still some of the best baseball players that I have ever seen. So if I grew up on the steroid era and the players of my childhood aren't in the Hall of Fame, well, what if the players of your childhood, Bob, weren't in the Hall of Fame? You would think a lot less of it, right?
Like absolutely.
The people you grew up with, if that's what got you into the sport of baseball and those guys aren't honored into the Hall of Fame, you would think less of the Hall of Fame. Well, that's the position. I grew up in a different era. Those were the guys of my era. If they're not in, then, well, what am I supposed to make of the whole Hall of Fame anyway?
Jeff Caves is in studio. He and Mike Prater getting set to take over at 3 o'clock today. Jeff, what do you guys have on the schedule today?
We're going to start with the quarterback race at Boise State in the recruiting territory for Brock Purdy. And a kid that's become one of the more highly sought-after quarterbacks remaining on the board for any school that needs one, including Alabama, or he'll be visiting, and what that race looks like, specifically from the eyes of his coach, who's got some very good insight into how this race looks. And what I will tell you about the conversation we'll have very shortly with him is I would not count Boise State out. If you listen to this coach, I think he has some solid reasons why Boise State could still be in a good situation for Brock Purdy. Shea McClellan from the New England Patriots didn't get many snaps because of injury, and we'll see what he wants to say about his future. In the meantime, that team goes to another Super Bowl, and Shea has to watch it the way we do, and we'll talk to him at 4 o'clock.
When you look at the quarterbacks, you think Boise State, is Brock Purdy right now plan A? I mean, that's if he's willing to come, he's going to be the guy.
I would say that, yes. I think that they're waiting to see if he can survive a trip to Tuscaloosa, which I don't know how a kid can make it out of there without committing to want to be a part of that, but we're going to find out.
All right, should be fascinating. Again, great lineup of guests today. Shea McClellan, Preston Jones is the coach down in Arizona that coached Brock Purdy. And again, Cajun Prater starting in a matter of minutes. And Chris, we've got a couple great guests tomorrow. 2 o'clock, of course, it's Huddle Up with Harris every Wednesday at 2. Brian Harsin will be on for 15 minutes to talk about college football with us and Boise State. Unfortunately, I don't think they'll get into recruiting, kind of illegal to talk about different people until you sign them. And then at 1:15, I think one of the more exciting players on the Boise State basketball team, Alex Hobbs, will talk about his improvement and development in his sophomore season.
Hobbs clearly has a story. I mean, if you've watched a Boise State basketball game with the national broadcast on television at any point throughout the year, they probably reference his offseason and some of the work that he put in. Clearly, they ask him about that, and he talks about it. So we'll try to get the lowdown from him coming up tomorrow at 1:15.
Should be a good show tomorrow as well. And again, thanks today to Sam Vecini and Matt Snyder, our guests, talking college basketball and baseball. Chris, look forward to being on the show with you tomorrow. Have fun, continued fun down in California, getting ready for the women's game tomorrow against San Jose State.
Tomorrow at 8, 13:50 a.m. the ticket.
Men's game also tomorrow at 8, as Boise State will host San Jose State. Cajun Prater coming up next on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 13:50 a.m. The Ticket.